07-34-45, the United States against Fred T. Moore. And Sholey.
Thank you, Your Honors. Renee Schooley, Assistant Prosecutor from the Southern District of Illinois, representing Fred Moore. The issue in this case is whether the district court abused its discretion in allowing the introduction of other act evidence under 404B. Mr. Moore was charged with possession with intent to distribute crack cocaine, being a felon in possession of a firearm and use of a firearm during a drug trafficking offense. The other act evidence that was admitted involved an incident that happened 2 weeks earlier involving a high-speed chase when Mr. Moore threw 10 rocks of crack cocaine out of his car, was arrested, and allegedly gave a confession to that offense. Under 404B, there's a presumption against the admissibility of other act evidence, and this court has developed a four-part test for determining whether that evidence can come in. The four-part test involves whether the evidence is directed toward a matter in issue other than the defendant's propensity to commit the crime charged. In this case, our position is that the jury would have had to have been influenced by this evidence of 2 weeks earlier, Mr. Moore being in possession of crack cocaine and allegedly admitting that he was going to distribute it. The second standard is that the evidence must show that the other act is similar enough and close in time to be relevant. We admit that that meets in this case. Thirdly, the evidence must be sufficient to support a jury finding that the defendant committed the similar offense. Our argument in our motion to prohibit the introduction of this evidence was that while the East St. Louis Police Department had the ability to videotape record any confession made by defendants, that wasn't done in this case. There was no signed written confession. It was all the police officer's testimony of what Mr. Moore said.
You have some law to present to the court that they have to tape it?
No, Your Honor. My argument in the motion as well as in the trial was that they had the ability to do that and just...
Yeah, but I'm asking you that.
Did not do that. But no, I have no authority that they have to do that in this type of case. And fourth, that the probative value of the evidence must not be substantially outweighed by the danger of unfair prejudice. The district court, in ruling on the motion, did not address all four factors. It just ultimately made a finding that the evidence is admissible and that it's not unfairly prejudicial.
What was the nature of the defense in this case? My understanding is that it essentially went to the issue of his knowledge. Right. He was claiming that the driver of the car gave him the bag and told him to get rid of it after bailing out of the car, etc. So that would seem to make the other acts evidence highly probative.
Yes, I guess as to knowledge. However, I don't think the district court went through the test to analyze it.
The record's sufficient for us to affirm on that basis. The fact that the district court didn't say any magic words about in what sense the other act's evidence was relevant to knowledge fatal to the case. Right?
True.
Are you referring specifically to the crack cocaine dealing case that was introduced?
Yes.
All right. How could it have prejudiced a jury in the fact that there was no evidence on the firearm charge?
Well, I think it was because the way the jury was instructed that it could apply to all charges. Although, I mean, there was no evidence. I can see.
Don't you merely speculate that they could have inferred that he was a criminal and likely to carry a gun?
I don't believe that was argued by either party.
No, I say, but you don't you merely speculate that?
Yes.
There's no evidence that was presented on it.
No.
And the government didn't bring it up at all.
No. And there was no evidence that in the previous case he was in fact, there was evidence that he was not in possession of a firearm in that case. I just asked the court to take that into consideration, and we would ask that the judgment be vacated and sent back for a retrial.
Thank you, Ms. Schooley.
Thank you.
We'll hear next from Mr. Kapsick.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Dan Kapsack. I'm here today as the appellee on behalf of the United States government. I'm a federal prosecutor in the Southern District of Illinois. Your Honors, in this case, the district court did not abuse its discretion by permitting prior evidence regarding the appellant's possession of crack cocaine and flight from police for the following reasons, because it showed the appellant's knowledge, intent, motive, and absence of mistake regarding the offense for which he is charged. Your Honors, Ms. Schooley is right that this court employs a four-part test to determine if prior acts, evidence, or convictions are to be admitted. And the first part of that test is whether it's shown for propensity. In this case, Your Honors, the evidence that was admitted by the district court was not admitted to show propensity, but in fact the appellant's knowledge, intent, motive, and absence of mistake. And that first part is met by the evidence that was admitted by the court, Your Honors. First, the evidence that was admitted regarding January the 15th of 2007 showed that, in fact, the appellant had the knowledge that what he possessed on January the 29th of 2007 was at the very least an illegal substance, in this case, namely crack cocaine. Your Honors, secondly, this evidence from January 15, 2007 also showed that there was no absence of mistake regarding the January 29, 2007 offense. It showed that, in fact, there's no chance that what the appellant was carrying was anything other than an illegal substance, that he knew what he was carrying was, in fact, an illegal substance. And again, that was crack cocaine, the same illegal substance he was carrying with him on January the 15th of 2007. Your Honors, another very important part of this test is intent. On January 15th of 2007, the appellant possessed this crack cocaine. The following day, he made an admission to East St. Louis police officers that his intent was to distribute that crack cocaine for profit. He made that admission during a statement the following day. Your Honors, on January the 15th, the appellant possessed 16.3 grams of crack cocaine. He admitted it was a distribution amount. The amount that he possessed 2 weeks later, by my calculation, was more than 15 times that, 290 grams of crack cocaine. I think it's fair to say that that amount, therefore, was also a distribution amount. And finally, Your Honors, on January 29, 2007, by possessing this cocaine, I think we also know what the motive was. It was for profit. 2 weeks prior, he admitted that he was going to distribute the 16 grams of crack cocaine that he had to make money. He used the word hustle. On the 29th, again, he possessed so much more. His motive on that date also was for profit.
You led with this other acts evidence, didn't you?
Yes, that was our first item of evidence, Your Honor, that we put on. And the reason we did so was we wanted to keep things chronological. We certainly felt like it was a very important piece of evidence, and by admitting that, or by asking the court to admit it, which the court did, we felt like it would show, would be a good leadoff, so to speak.
Once a drug dealer, always a drug dealer.
Well, I don't think we were trying to show anything close to propensity, Your Honor, but we felt like it was very important to show what his knowledge was and motive, and of course his intent as well.
Usually it's the other way around. Other acts evidence comes in at the end.
Yes, Your Honor, and we are aware that that is a common way of proceeding a trial. We felt like it was to our benefit to do so. Your Honors, very briefly, the second part of this test is also met, and that is because we have a similar illegal substance, crack cocaine. We also have a similar flight. In both examples, both times, the appellant took off from police, first in his own vehicle on the 15th, second on foot on the 29th. Both times he tossed bags that contained crack cocaine. And finally, Your Honor, those events took place just 2 weeks apart, which we think is very strong evidence, or that it's a good example of why it meets the second part of this test. Your Honor, the third part is met as well. There's sufficient evidence, and that is because the appellant made an admission, as I mentioned, on January the 16th. And finally, Your Honors, the probative value here outweighed its prejudicial effect. And the probativeness is evidenced by what I just mentioned. The court, I believe, Your Honor, mitigated the prejudicial effect in its pretrial order and also in its limiting instruction to the jury by mentioning that this evidence could only be considered for knowledge, intent, motive, and absence of mistake. And also indicated, Your Honors, that in its pretrial order, the district court noted that this evidence is not the kind that would cause a jury to make a decision based upon emotion. Your Honors, if there are no other questions, I will yield back the balance of my time, and I will respectfully ask this court to uphold the lower court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kapsack. How much time does Ms. Schooley have? She has 4 minutes.
Just briefly, Your Honors, I'm glad Judge Sykes brought up the part about the government having this as their first form of evidence in the trial. In order to reach a verdict on the possession of the crack cocaine, first the jurors had to find that he had knowledge. Once they found that, then they went to the issue of intent. And our position is that they were unduly influenced by this other act evidence because of the intent aspect of it on top of the knowledge.
All that does is demonstrate that it was admitted for a permitted purpose and not for the propensity inference. Not clear on why you're making that up.
Well, the fact that he, in the evidence they submitted, there was this admission that he allegedly made about his intent of what he was going to do with the drugs. And I think the reliability of that admission is somewhat in question, and without that evidence being in there, the jurors, even if they found knowledge, may not have found, they may have been unduly influenced by that admission in finding the intent.
I'm not quite following. There was a confession in this case as well as in the prior incident.
No, in the prior, just in
okay,
the prior.
Okay, so you're referring to the prior confession.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schooley. Indeed, thanks to both counsel in the case, and the case will be taken under advisement.